Blog Talk Radio.
We also did another series of executive orders, some maybe more meaningful than others, some issues for technical issues for businesses, something called the WARN Act, which means you just have to provide notification for mass layoffs. We reduced the restrictions related to that. Interstate commerce to allow logistics to move between states. We also clarified some of those rules and rulemaking, basically aligned them with the federal rules. We did the same on issues that are a little bit more personal to people, and that's the issue of the social safety net in the state of California, issues related to access to CalWORKs and food stamps, welfare to work, and making sure that people don't have to come up for eligibility with the kind of anxiety that this moment meets. We're basically allaying those concerns, at least for the next 90 days, likely to extend beyond that, to make access and availability of those benefits more readily secured. So people that are existing recipients of those benefits don't have to worry about coming back for reauthorization. We really want to focus on new beneficiaries, people that are applying in real time. That will be our focus. So that was a significant executive order that we advanced today as well, in terms of a thrust of real focus for the state, the issue of homelessness. We also put out an executive order related to this issue. We have prioritized this issue in the state of California. We doubled down on an historic investment last year, $650 million of emergency grants to address the needs of our most vulnerable residents in the state of California. Some 108,000 unsheltered homeless in the state, 151,000 in our last point in time account. We're modeling our concerns and we are planning, but now we're distributing real resources and real funding. In addition to the money that was made available last year in the emergency grants, we wanted to provide more flexibility for the cities and counties on how they access those dollars and more certainty that when they draw down those dollars by opening up the opportunity to focus on the COVID-19 crisis, that they can site facilities and they can convert facilities. So we're waiving some of our environmental processes, CEQA, for siting. We are making it easier to bring up these facilities. We're also making sure that the eligible uses for the existing dollars are spread out more comprehensively to meet this moment. But in addition to that, we are deploying an additional $100 million to the cities and counties in real time to meet this crisis head on and to address the needs of our most vulnerable on the streets and the sidewalks. $50 million on top of that for hotel-motel conversions. And here's the thinking. We're running models, and I'll just give you one of those models for the purpose of full transparency. Over the next eight-week period, we have modeled that of the 108,000 unsheltered Californians that are out on the streets, if you had an attack rate of about 56%, you're looking at 60-plus thousand individuals that may have COVID-19. That creates a deep point of anxiety for the existing population, but moreover for our healthcare delivery system, our capacity to move people in and out of the shelter safely without contacting other people and putting them at risk as well. And so as a consequence of this modeling, as a consequence of putting, I think, a punctuation point on the urgency of now to address this issue, we have put these dollars out, but we're also putting out over 1,300 trailers. Now, we just procured those trailers today. We're distributing those trailers throughout the state of California, 1,309 to be exact. We'll be distributing, hauling those trailers, installing those trailers throughout the state of California over the next number of days. This Friday, we will announce two large hospitals that we have procured that we'll be bringing into our portfolio to address that 19 to 20,000 gap. We have one in Southern California, one in Northern California. We're negotiating with many other hospitals to bring them online. Local governments are doing the same. But we recognize we need support of the federal government. It was announced last night, I announced, that we are requesting specific asks of the federal administration. We would like to procure, and we've been in conversations going back now a few weeks since the Grand Princess was the crisis that focused most of our attention, at looking at our mobile hospital and the prospect of bringing the U.S. Navy to bear and supporting the acquisition of the Mercy here off the coast of the state of California, which would provide an additional 1,000 bed capacity, provides support for pharmacists and other diagnostic equipment. So we've put in that formal request of the administration. I referenced last night a conversation with the president yesterday evening specific to that request. We've now more formalized that request today. In addition to that, we have requested two mobile field hospitals for the state of California. Those mobile hospitals have a capacity for 496 beds in each of those mobile units. In addition to that, and I'll go into this more specifically in the coming days, I've requested a series of other assets, be it PPE, as well as additional support through Health and Human Services, so that we can scale up not just the physical capacity of our healthcare delivery system, but the human capacity that we anticipate. And we made it crystal clear to the federal government that we need to procure more swabs so we can do specimen samples, not just the diagnostics on the back end. We've been saying this now for weeks, that these kits are not necessarily all complete. And again, for the purposes of clarification to the public, I think we need to be more transparent about that. But nonetheless, our capacity is increasing, but supplies can become increasingly challenging. Also, our state employees that have new guidelines on telework and are doing new rotated shifts and are doing something else that I'm really inspired by. We're doing surveys of our employees in certain capacities of government that are non-essential. Rather than just sending those employees home, they're willing through these surveys to say, you know what, I have this skill on applications that I can apply, and we're shifting them over, for example, to begin the process of helping us with unemployment insurance. Just a simple proof point. We average about 2,000 unemployment insurance claims a day. We have in the past. 2 days ago, or 3 days, we saw about 40,000 applications. After that, 70,000 yesterday, 80,000 unemployment applications, double in a 48-hour period. And so in order to meet that moment, I just want to applaud our frontline employees, our workers in these jobs that may be considered non-essential, making themselves essential and rotating out of their job descriptions and new job descriptions to meet this moment. It's just, again, a point of inspiration and deep respect at this moment in time.
All right, welcome to Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter Show. We are rocking and rolling and rocking. It is a lot going on here in Fresno and across the country. I don't even know where to start at tonight. But we'll just say good evening to everyone. We have folks on the line already. Lines are lit up like a Christmas tree. We like to give a quality show each and every day. Sometimes I get censored. My people get censored who will call it in. So hopefully they're not censored today. We do have a couple of callers there. But I just want to give a shout out to a lot of the freedom fighters across the world, across the country, who's doing good work. Good work. I am in my studio. That's right, my studio. The calling number is 516-387-1474. 516-387-1474. You with Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter Show. We are rocking and rolling and rolling and rocking from the west side, the golden west side of Fresno. That's right, the golden west side of Fresno. No better place to be in Fresno but the Golden West Side. I'd like to just, I can't thank everyone enough for all of their volunteering and canvassing, walking, and phone calls, and putting signs in your yard. It just do my heart, Don't make me cry tonight. See a grown man cry, that's not good. But anyway, just want to just let everybody know how much I appreciate them working with our campaign. There was a lot of people who didn't believe in us, but when you believe in yourselves, you can make things happen. So always believe in yourself no matter what anyone else thinks. If your heart says go for it, you go for it, no matter what anyone else say. And it was just, you know, a lot of people who, I can't even think of everyone's name. It would take me all night, but just everyone, you know who you are, who donated your time and skill sets. It was just remarkable to serve my community, You know, growing up in West Fresno, in the Walnut Gardens area, I never would have thought as a young man, a child, running around with, you know, snotty nose, nappy head, you know, going up to the Hinton Center. I never, ever would have thought that I would have had the opportunity to run for mayor of Fresno. It was a learning experience. We learned a lot. We learned who our friends are. And, you know, I like people that disagree with me because that's how I learn. It was good. It was good. You know that the election was rigged. A lot of our campaign information was stolen by the opponents. We know the Fresno Bee willfully did not put our campaign into the Fresno Bee. So there's a lot of things that went on. Our California Advocate endorsed Jerry Dyer, which no one can understand that, but that did happen. So, you know, people were asking me to run for city council. I told them, I said, you know, God got to show me that. but we ran for the highest seat in the city. And I think that for our children, our elders who are still living, and those elders who have passed on, like my grandmother, who was a pioneer here in this community, who was an activist here in this community, who passed the baton to me. To look after the community after she done went on home to glory. That's who I am, you know. And it was just great to see our children involved, seeing our children walk precincts and talking to people at the door. It was just beautiful. It was beautiful. Unfortunately, I had pneumonia during the time, just barely getting over that. Should be like 99%. I'm hoping over the pneumonia. But it was just a beautiful, beautiful time. So I just want to say thank you again. We are in third place. There were three black men running, and the city did not want the world to know that there were three black men running for the seat of Fresno. And so thank you again. We'll be coming out with a thank you, official thank you once everything is certified. The ballots and what have you. I did the election office did update the numbers. So let me say this real quick before we go into the show. Brother Gomez was on the show last night, and I didn't quite understand what he was saying, but I got some clarity from our campaign manager. And what my understanding is that there were 2,000 ballots that were cast. And out of the 2,000 ballots that were cast, 2,000 people did not even mark on the ballot for mayor. And if they did mark on the ballot for mayor, they marked two people. And so those ballots was not even counted. Had those ballots, from my understanding, was filled out correctly with picking one person, it was brought to my attention that Jerry Dyer would have had a runoff with Andrew Janz. But anyway, it's water under the bridge. We learned a lot from it. If that's, you know, me running for office is something that the creator and the elders want, I guess that they'll let me know that down the road. Anyway, let's get to the show. Governor Newsom has had a press conference talking about the different things that he's putting in place right now. very concerned about the virus. He says that more than half of California could be affected by the virus in 2 months. In 2 months, that the entire California can be affected by the virus. So he's moving very swiftly and fast, trying to listening to his press conference about trying to put people up in hotels, you know, buying trailers and et cetera. So this is a serious thing. I mean, I never thought that I would live to see. I mean, I would see stuff like this on a movie, but not actually living in it right now. I'm living in like a movie right now that I would be at the theater watching, but we're actually watching ourselves with this virus coming all the way from China to the United States, and it's affecting every major city. There's basketball players who've been affected. There's a lot of people. And then also we're going to talk about there were some people in Los Angeles, and I'll play that a little bit later. Caltrain owned a bunch of homes. I think it was like 21 homes in one area. They bought them. They're going to put, I guess, a freeway or something, and they're vacant. They're empty. And so people went and occupied these homes. You know, they said, hey, we're homeless. We got to get off the streets. There's nobody living here. So we're just going to, you know, take over this home so that, you know, we can get out of harm's way because of no place to go, you know. And we have millions, thousands and thousands of people who are homeless in the state of California. And so we're going to go to the phones right now. I want to get different people's perspective on what they feel is going on. It's a real serious epidemic right now for our families. I believe that Fresno, last night, was on lockdown. They did not want anyone out on the streets unless you just had to go somewhere, go to work or to a store or what have you. The governor also, you know, last night's show, we talked about the martial law. What does martial law mean? I'm finding out that a lot of people don't even know what martial law means. I'm like, wow, okay. So I guess this is an education piece for everybody. But we're going to talk about martial law, talk about these folks taking over these homes in L.A. that Caltrain owns, which is the state of California. And so, callers, you're on the line here. I'd like to welcome you to the show, Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter show. We had caller 0016. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Fine. I'm doing fine.
Hey, that sounds like one of my frontline soldiers that holds the front line here in Fresno. And we'd just like to thank you for coming on our show tonight. And I know you have been one of the ones who, well, there's many, but you have been very, very critical on people taking this situation more serious than what they're taking it. Let me just say this for a disclaimer, and I want you to go ahead and speak. I was driving up at Woodward Park the other day, which is North Fresno, and I was shocked to see people riding their bikes, walking their dogs, playing with their cats, just like it's a normal day. Like, there's no crisis going on in the world. People, you know, walking around the trails, eating ice cream, you know, like I said, walking their dogs and I'm like, I thought we were in a crisis situation, and people are like just nonchalant, like maybe they haven't heard about it. You know, people are at Woodward Park, you know, they're parked, you know, sitting down, laying on the grass. I'm like, well, I thought we were in a, you know, a situation. So Anyway, caller, talk to us. You're at 0016. You have the floor.
Well, when they announced that the virus was out, I think what's happening, people immediately start going to stores trying to get toilet paper, paper towels, things to eat, you know. And then you're always going to have individuals who don't really take things seriously. But when they start to talk about, you know, we have our senior citizens that we really need to protect, we need to isolate them, they're still nursing homes. So I volunteer and go out to those facilities as a busman. And so we got notice alert that the state said we cannot go, there's no visitors. You got to realize that people don't realize that elderly make seniors make a big, you know, they're a big part of our economic because they retire, they have income coming in. So we figure billions of senior citizens in these facilities and skilled nursing homes all over the nation. They're creating jobs for many people, pharmaceuticals, doctors. So they're in big need. You know, we lose them, our economy is going to crash. And not that it's just about money, but to the government, it really is. And so then you have the kids going to school, you know, the education being put on hold, the colleges. So to not really think that was serious and this nationwide, and they're talking about this virus is worse than the flu, and you know how the flu can take you down. And you're trying to just recover from that. So they're trying to figure out how are they going to handle this. They really don't have control of how to protect this yet. So they're saying, hey, the best thing to do is isolate them. You know, let's call it and say you need to stay in till further notice. You know, go out if you have to. And so many people don't listen to the news or don't take things that seriously said over the news and the radios and stuff, but when they're sitting here saying no school, no college, people getting off of work, no contact, don't go into restaurants, you know, they're just going to hand it's a crisis. And so I think I was a little more alert too because my daughter's in the health field and they literally, she's a respiratory therapist, and they literally want to pay her $4,000 a week. And she turned it down because they're not protected. They can catch that too. Some doctors, physician assistants, nurses, people in the health field are catching it and getting sick, and some have passed as well. So what they're not doing, they're not trying to, they can't tell us everything, but if they're telling you to stay in your home and isolate yourself, this is real severe. And if you think it's not, it's an airborne situation and you have to, it can be it can be up in the air for 3 hours at least. That's why they're telling you to have 3 to 6 feet apart. Don't go into meetings, 10 or more, because you can basically catch it from someone. You may not necessarily have the symptoms right then, but later on they can come. Celebrities, and this is one thing that it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. It does not discriminate. And so to not think it's not seriously, to tell, so now they're pulling in the military, and if any of them refuse to go into work, there'll be penalties for them. So they're pulling them in now because they need to make sure people don't break into businesses and make sure people are not going into stores, taking too many things. So it's very severe, and people need to listen, get on their phone, get on their television, get on the radio, and they really need to make themselves aware. So I've been just communicating with my little circle and sanitizing. It gives you some tips on things that you need to do. Sanitation is very important. You know, wiping down everything, not touching your face, being cautious of the cough or sneeze. And if you have appointments, they're saying you can go to the doctor, you know, if you have your appointment, but really don't just be out there wondering for it, and they will stop you if you're traveling. They're getting people off the road because they're not trying to get this thing spread. Now, they said on the radio KMJ and some of these other stations that they're predicting 52 million people by July. Half of that, 25. Those are really large numbers because if you have people just here in Fresno, one thing he did, he cleared the streets and put the homeless into motels and they're leasing them because they're really trying to get this under control. They started this already in Frisco. They rented motels to get the homeless off the street. You know, so I think it's a good thing that the United States is coming together and working together, and it gives you some time to be with your family, gives you some time to rest, some time to read your words, some time to pray. Wherever your level is, it's at least bringing people, slowing them down and making them, you know, sit back and consider some things and have conversation. But I told a neighbor, and he cuts lawns, and he had not a clue. I just seen someone earlier today. They were cutting the lawns like it was not a big deal. You know, the postal man, he dropped off the mail. So I think it's people who have individual, just, you know, themselves, their type of job. I think they can do it to a certain extent, but there's, you know, they still got a hand on it. So I would just say, listen, you know, if right. they say stay in, they're asking if, they, you know, any seniors, they need food or anything, take it to them. Do not let them come out. So cause if you have your immune system is weak, yeah.
Well, I do go over in Florida right now. I like for my caller, Tony, to call back in. Don't hang up once you call in, Tony. I guess it's spring break over on, I don't know, Florida or somewhere, and I've seen a lot of our babies out on the beach and just kicking it and having fun. And so I'm kind of like, okay. But, you know, kids have their own way of thinking and et cetera. So I'm going to go to the next caller, 5172. Welcome to Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter Show. We're broadcasting from the West Coast, California, better known as Mississippi, Fresno, the San Joaquin Valley. And we are good title, didn't I? Go ahead, caller, 5172.
Okay, well, thank you for taking my call. And I just wanted to follow up on what the first caller was saying about senior citizens. I have a mom who is very advanced in age, and so I'm trying to make sure that when I do go out to pick up meds for her or run errands for her, that when I come back, I do make sure to wash my hands. I'm sanitizing surfaces that she has to touch. But I'm also concerned not just about the seniors, but about the younger members of the family, that, you know, making sure that they're washing their hands on a regular basis, that their toys that they're playing with are being, you know, cleaned and bleached and things like that. The same things that they teach us in Head Start about sanitizing toys and things like that. Because a lot of times, I can't speak for anybody else, but in a lot of Black households, we are multi-generational families. And so, you know, when you go out, those youngsters you were talking about on spring break, Reverend Harris, those kids are going to go back and possibly infect their parents and their grandparents and their great-grandparents. And that is what the tragedy is to me. That's what I wanted to just share. And hopefully you know, we're looking out in our communities for one another, you know, checking on your elderly neighbors and checking on the young moms that have, you know, several kids under the age of 10 and, you know, might have her hands full. I mean, we have to try to remember we're a community and look out after each other the way our ancestors did.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's all I wanted to share.
That's a great point. I don't know if you can text Tony and tell him to call back in. You know, man, it's like someone asked me a question today, and I didn't quite know how to answer it. I mean, the question wasn't a funny question, but it was like I know how to answer it for me, but I didn't know how to answer it for them, nor did I know, like, was one of them questions like, whatever you say, that's what I'm going to do. But the question that was presented to me today was, should we be scared? Or should I be scared? Or should we be scared?
Wow.
And I have to kind of stop in my tracks and say, well, it is a concern. It is here. It is real. I said there's certain things that we should be doing to be proactive and, you know, preventative, you know. And I said, but go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering, there's a difference between being mindful of what's occurring and being fearful. And I had a chance to talk to someone earlier, and I'm not afraid. You know, people who are close to their faith should not be afraid if they're doing everything that they're supposed to be doing. But being mindful and being afraid, I think, are two different things.
Yeah, because I said, well, from my perspective, I said, I'm just going to do what I can to be preventative and what have you. I said, but I'm not going to, if I don't live my life in fear, you know, I said, so, you know, the creator and God that I serve sits higher than this virus. I said, but that's just from my perspective. I said, people may look at it different and maybe freaking out and all of this. I said, but for me, I said, yes, I'm going to wash my hands. Yes, I'm going to clean my doorknob. Yes, I'm going to, you know, I was cleaning today. I cleaned out my refrigerator, you know, just doing certain things. But I said, I'm not going to live my life in fear. I said, because I believe that God has the ultimate last say over this. So I don't know if I gave her the right answer.
You have a good perspective, though.
Yeah.
So I think the fear would be, and the fear is the unknown, them not really having a cure, or speculating and trying to figure it out. The scare would be just the flesh, you know, again, the unknown, are, you know, scared because there's no true answer if you're going to get it or not. But, you know, just like the caller said, you really have to sanitize your doorknob. It's mainly really just being conscientious of being clean and, you know, being conscious of going around other people who may have them. We have celebrities who actually have a symptom. And, you know, they got on the, you know, live channel and basically saying, you know, be cautious, you know, don't go if you don't have to go. So, I mean, you know, again, we may be able to say we're not scared because we understand death. We understand that process because we're maybe older, we've experienced that. So someone who hasn't, that would be a common concern. You know, I don't know their age group and where they are spiritually. So those would be their words, scared, because you've seen a lot of, you know, when I was at the store, you've seen a lot of fear in people's faces. You know, they're wearing the masks, but the masks really, from what my daughter was saying, as a respiratory therapist, they have a specific mask that they have to wear. And so many, they're out of them. And so these masks that people are wearing, they're really not protecting them because they have different type of masks for people in the construction, the painting field. So those are not the same as the respiratory therapist mask. And so it's not being ignorant and just continuing to update yourself on the information. Now, everyone says Google and get on the phone. Now it's time for the millennium and other people who are so computer avid and so onto their phone to listen and follow the instructions. Because if you don't follow the instructions, then you are going to be at a high risk. And right now, if the word scared is coming to thought for that individual, then they really need to be cautious and just follow instructions.
You know,
you can.
That's true. Let me just say this. The thing I'm not afraid. The thing that I am concerned about is the fact that more people are not being tested because there are no tests available, and there don't seem to be any tests available unless you are actually showing symptoms. Now, a lot of people they've been saying are asymptomatic and could still be, you know, contagious, carrying this contagion. And so people are not, I think the public is not asking the right questions of the Trump administration because they knew months, years in advance that this was coming and they did nothing. He dismantled
the information. And they also sat back and decided that they were going to try to make a profit out of this. Now, you know, you were just thinking about asymptomatic folks. Think about this also. Think about the people who are infected who work in certain job titles, but we have no idea if they're carrying a symptom or not because it does lie dormant for a while. But, you know, with these tests not being readily available, a lot of people are just kind of going with the flow and believing that that little paper mask that they're wearing is going to protect them when we know that it's really not going to.
That's right. And there are not even enough to go around to medical staff. So you
know
if it's not enough for them, it's not enough for the public. These are the things we should be concerned about and making sure that, you know, manufacturers are cranking these things out. I mean, just like in wartime. We have factories that could be doing this, and they're not doing it. Why is that?
Well, supposedly the president put in the Production Act of 1950, but yet nothing has taken place. They haven't had, you know, some of these factories that right now, say like Jim Beam, they're not distilling alcohol. You mean to tell me you can't make hand sanitizer? You're not working on cars. We can't work on, you know, making some respirators for people. We can't work on getting some masks out with filtration in them. Come on now. Let's get in where you fit in. Let's help out where we can.
The president did say they're going to be setting up, I guess you come in your cars at Walmart, CVS, Walgreens, Target, different locations. Where they're going to be doing the swab and giving the shot. So it's almost like
The drive-in test.
Right. And so they said that shot by itself is like $3,500, just one shot. But they're getting all these, and you know, they're getting the pharmacists and, you know, all these different places to assist with this. Of course, he said we won't be paying for it, but that's how much the shots run. And so they
The average person cannot afford that. This is not for the readily available people.
So this is going to be interesting. So they're still telling people you have doctor appointments, you know, go to that. If you, if you feel symptoms, go to the ER. So it's at the discretion of yourself, you know, how do you feel? And so, are in panic. I have a cousin working in the prison. And they just released the inmates about a week ago from I guess, lockdown. And so
voluntary confinement.
They're assuming some. Right. So,
Let me jump in there real quick. So the governor stated today that the kits that he has received or the kits that have came to Fresno has missing parts to them. I'm not sure if, you know, I'm not sure if these kits are made on an assembly line, is the kits are made by hand. But the bottom line is that California is in a crisis mode, and we're receiving kits that's not even put together correctly.
That's the thing. This is where we should start using some of these smaller manufacturers.
Right.
To aid in getting these kits out.
Like you said, we have too many people with knowledge and experiences, and we need to utilize them. You know.
So one of the things that I did today was that got off work early. Was I was able to be blessed to get about 150 vegetable plants. One of the other crisis situations we're having right now is food. I feel that we're going to run out of food because of the panic, because of folks. People should not panic. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is when you go to the grocery stores right now, all the shelves are empty just about. The food has to come from somewhere.
Some grains, some cornbread, some chicken. And they have containers in the refrigerator front.
And
if you're hungry,
and people are just don't know what to do. So what I did was today, and I'm encouraging everyone to do this if they would, is to plant some type of vegetable at your house. How to plant tomato plants, and I was doing that today, giving a little tutorial on how to dig the hole. And et cetera. And so these are things that we can do to help ourselves, one, and two, to help our community, right? Because you're not going to eat all the tomatoes, okay, or whatever. And this is a way that we can embrace community and to show that during a crisis mode like this, that you know, we can sit around complaining and da-da-da-da, but it's like, hey, we're out here doing something. We're out here, you know, being a change agent in our community where, you know, I gave Eileen some vegetables today so that, you know, she could go home with her grandmother who's 100 and her mother who's 102 to help, you know, just to help. And I think that, you know, for me, working in the with the ground, Mother Nature is therapeutic for me. So I was able
for
to
all of us.
Relax today as I was, you know, watching everybody in panic mode. But when I came home, grabbed my shovel, my rake, I could feel my body relax, okay? It's therapeutic, you know, looking at the plants, looking at the dirt. I cut up like two or three worms today. I felt very bad. But my point is that we have to do something best we can to help bring some stable, some type of food. Now, I've been cooking greens all week. I just went and I spent like $30 or $40 on greens in college. Bell peppers, this is that. And I bought this instant cooker, which is just, man, that's better than a wife. Anyway, y'all didn't hear that. But my point is, my point is that it cooks really good and it cooks greens in 30 minutes. And I did a show and I showed people and I made believers out of people. So go get you one of them instant pot cookers. But
I'm going to check one of them out.
My point is that what I'm doing for my household is that I'm investing in vegetables, and I'm cooking the vegetables, and then I'm turning around and I'm bagging them and I'm putting them in the refrigerator. Because Grandma taught us that we have to plan for a bad, a cloudy day.
That's right.
As a young man, how to be able to can peaches, how to make jelly, how to be able to do for myself, and don't think that Food Max is obligated to have food in their store.
Right.
They're not obligated to have food in their store. They have food in
their
store because they want to make money. Now, I have plants here in my home right now that's outside my front door. I planted about 30 plants today. Eggplant, bell peppers, tomatoes. We're going to have corn, white corn, yellow corn. We're going to have mustard greens and collard greens all in the flower bed. And I might go down and get me some chickens too. You know, and
a dog in the house.
Please,
I'm
going to
get a coop.
I was good sometimes, but now I'm gouging up the prices here. I said, who paid $4 for a dozen of eggs?
Yeah, if you can find them.
Yes, if you can find them.
I've been saying to people that if you have dried beans on your shelf, you are sitting on gold. I made a pot of black eyed peas last night.
I have several.
And I'm going to cook up some rice, and I'm buying cornbread. Nobody laugh at me because I'm not a cornbread cooker. But if you have got dried beans, dried soup mixes on your shelves, you are ahead of the game. Believe me. Grandma knew what was up.
I went and got six bags. Yeah, I went and got six bags.
Those are staples that you should always keep. I keep
always
two or three bags of rice and three or four bags of beans. I cook greens today.
That's right.
So, you know, you got to make this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So,
and they're healthy.
Denise brought up a good point because I know at her home she has different fruit trees. So to me, it wouldn't make any sense. I'm just saying to me, it wouldn't make any sense for me to go buy the same tree that Sister Denise has. If Sister Denise has a lemon tree or a plum tree, why would I go buy the same tree? I should go buy a peach tree or a plum tree, so that we can be able to help one another with different fruit. So,
Denise
said, well, you know, Harris, you know, I got a bag of lemons, and I'll trade you, or let's exchange for a bag of peaches. That's how our
barter system
works.
Yes.
That's how you do it.
Yes. And that's how we're going to get through this.
I got a lemon and a peach.
See?
Yeah, Harold got a
whole
yard full of stuff.
Just my grandma did it.
You know what, Rev?
You know,
maybe we need to be doing a tutorial on how to can and how to preserve the way the Freedom School teaches the kids how to do that. This is an opportunity. You know, I was thinking about the Chinese word for crisis. You know, and crisis and opportunity go hand in hand. And
yes,
I'm not
do.
Saying that this is a joyous time, but I am saying that we can all learn something from what's going on right now. And I think it behooves us as black folks to understand that, because our ancestors faced worse dangers or just as bad dangers as this. And we came through that. So as far as I'm concerned, we are God's chosen people. So we have to figure out what's going to sustain our children, our grandkids, our elders, and ourselves, both mentally and physically, because mental health is important, too. People are freaking out. Some people
are
freaking out.
Well, what I'm going to do tomorrow, I'm going to look into, again, so I just posted how to make a helpful resources and protecting you from the COV DID 19, whatever. Okay. But anyway, it talks about how you can make a mask and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's what our show was on last night about resources. So if you're looking for resources, go back to our show last night. It's on my Facebook. I'm trying to remember that I uploaded to YouTube. I can't remember. But look at that. Share that with information. That's what this show is about, sharing resources and information with folks in the community. But let me get back to what I was saying now. Because you guys may not believe me. And we have another caller at 9144. Just hold on for this 1 second. We're going to click you in. That I'm going to find out tomorrow about building a chicken coop and trying to get some hens or something or whatever, whoever like eggs, whatever. But I just thought it was very ridiculous to pay $4 for a dozen of eggs. I'm telling you, almost when I got my bullhorn out my truck and my red back in the truck, I said, this is ridiculous. But we have to understand, because see, this is what people don't understand. People capitalize off of tragedy.
Yeah.
Did that make sense?
Oh, yeah. They take advantage of it.
So I'm going to say this, but I'm not saying it in a derogatory way. So if anyone get offended, I'll apologize. Kobe Bryant was one of the best basketball players ever played basketball as a black man, up there with Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, everybody. Unfortunately, Kobe Bryant got killed in a helicopter accident. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
All right.
Right.
So what happened was, after that, his wife grieving, of course, everybody's grieving, and everybody's hurt. What I noticed immediately, and I'm not saying this is wrong, all right? I'm just saying what I noticed. I noticed immediately people started selling Kobe Bryant t-shirts, Kobe Bryant
yep.
this, Kobe Bryant that, right here at the Justice Corners. Now, I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm not saying. What I'm saying is I notice in America when tragedy happens, people try to capitalize and up the money of what it would regularly cost, but they up the money.
Even the first responders were taking stuff from the crash site. So you're right.
Yeah, they were.
You're right.
Yeah, they were.
Right. And
you're
so,
right,
what I'm saying is that we have people fighting over toilet paper on Facebook.
Mm.
I mean, doing some real
knock down, drag out fights over toilet paper.
I mean, it was a heavyweight 12-round fight. People fighting over toilet paper, okay? Now, we have to understand that businesses has tripled the price on toilet paper. Why? Because it's a crisis situation. You see what I'm saying?
Here's our chance to collect.
Let me let this caller in, 9144, 9144. Welcome to Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter Show. Thank you for calling in. You have anything you want to talk to us about? Hi, 144, going once, twice. All right, maybe you're just listening. Okay. I just want us to be careful and make sure that, you know, within reason, you're not paying extra money for something, just, you know. And I don't know if that's against the law to do that. Maybe it's normal.
Price gouging is against the law.
Yep.
Price gouging
is
a crime.
It's a crime.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There have been 10 arrests nationwide for price gouging.
Okay. Now, last night we talked about
gas went down to $3.
Wow.
Last night we talked about martial law. I told everyone that I feel that the governor stated that, you know, he's not shy from calling martial law if people are not going to be responsible, stay in the house and do what they're supposed to do. That means, because a lot of people my job, I didn't even know what martial law was. And even at the store, the cashier lady said, I don't even know what martial law is, but I keep hearing everybody talk about it. So I explained to her what martial law is, and if it is launched in California, what it means is that the military has full control of every law enforcement agency. And we have no civil rights at that point. We have no civil liberties. Everything is controlled by the military and the government. And so that's just pretty much what it means in a nutshell, that we have to conform, do what they say, when they say, how high, how low, whatever. That's what it means. So we hope that it doesn't get to that point, because you're going to have tanks, you're going to have aircraft, you're going to have people looking like RoboCop. They can go inside your house if they want to. It's not a pretty thing, is what I'm saying. Do anyone want to expound off the talk about the martial law?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because this morning about 8 a.m., and I'm out here in the southwest near Cadillion Ashland, I'm in my backyard, and I look up, and I see two Black Hawk military helicopters flying real low. So do not be surprised, because they have these vehicles in the area already. So since they decide that they're going to declare martial law, that means that they can go ahead and put people in place in no time. And martial law is that thing where they can build it at your house if they want to. They can take over. And like you said, you know, you will have a direct commander you will have to answer to. You will have
no. I think they're easing us towards that right now.
Yeah. I do believe
they're easing us in. Yeah.
Easing us in.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know, but the thing is for people not to, the thing is not for people to panic and start screaming, is to keep your head about yourself, get your things together, and do what you need to do.
You know, for me, for those of us who are older and remember the 60s and 70s, I just say this.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not trying to panic anybody. All I'm trying to say is, if you have weapons, legally have weapons, make sure they're clean, ready to go.
That's
you
right.
Got ammo for them. And I'm only saying that because it's not that it's going to be every man for himself, but you want to be able to protect yourself and your family. If they are going to eventually declare martial law, there's always going to be a way that people are going to want to leave the area, no matter what the military or the authorities say. And you're going to need to protect yourself. Now, these militias, these posse comitata people, been preparing for this kind of thing forever. But Black people always seem to think, oh, that ain't going to happen. These things are not going to happen. That kind of stuff only happened on TV. Really? Really? Wouldn't you rather be prepared with your food, your shelter, and your self-defense than not be prepared? I'm just asking this as a question.
Right.
I would rather be prepared.
Because we, for some reason, we have got to stop buying into, this can happen to us. Well, you're starting to see that, yes, it can happen to you, because it is happening to you.
Right.
And at some point, like you said, at some point, your mettle is going to be tested, whether you realize this or not. And it is better to be prepared than not be prepared. In all honesty, you get ready. You stay ready, you ain't got to get ready.
You know, for those of you who are old enough to remember the book, The Spook Who Sat by the Door, I'm just going to say this. For all the brothers and sisters who have been in the military, who know how stand and defend, you know, you're going to be called on to help other folks. You're going to be called on because you know how to do it. And I'm only saying this because people might say I'm overreacting. Well, I have seen my people be shot down in the street. I have seen my people be shot down, killed, and no consequences are given to those who do the killing.
So, I understand. You're not overreacting.
That being said, you know, Reverend Harris, I'd like to know what your stance is on something like that, to be prepared at every level, whether it be shelter, food, self-defense, you know, clothing. I mean, all these things are important. What do you think about something like that?
Well, I think the Black Panther Party laid a good blueprint out for us in the 1960s. It was just unfortunate that Ronald Reagan, at the time of governor, did not take the guns out of the cops' hands take the guns out of their hands, who was executing black and brown people, women and children here in California as well as across the country. Then made it to where it was illegal for black people to carry guns without getting a permit to sit permit and what have you, but yet didn't take the guns out of the hands of the people who was doing the murdering, and that was the Oakland Police Department at that time, which
that's
they
right.
still have today. But I think that since then, we have done a poor job in teaching our people that, you know, we do have the right to bear arms. We do have the right to protect ourselves. I think it is something during this time right now that we do need to show up our arms to protect ourselves. What are you going to do? Call the police? Well, they assassinating us anyway. So, I mean, we have to use common sense, right, to be able to say, hey, you know, I have a right to protect myself and my family, and there's nothing wrong with that. You're not going to make me feel guilty. You're not going to try to use some Bible scripture. That's the Constitution. If white folks can do it, I can do it. If they can carry a gun, then we should be able to carry a gun. We need to be taking our children down to the gun range. We need to be taking our children down to the gun range so that they can start practicing. Just like white folks practice. They buy their children guns at the age of 5 and 6 years old. I'm talking about real guns, okay? I'm not talking about no
real guns.
Sam gun. I'm talking about a real gun that shoot and kill people. White folks buy their babies, their children guns at the age of 5 years old. So about time they become a teenager, they already have their concealed permit. They already know how to use that gun. Because that parent has invested into that little child to say, hey, you have a constitutional right to carry this gun. We're going to work on you getting a gun, concealed permit, and et cetera. So that child who was exposed at the age of 5 now can do what? Protect themselves and protect their community. That's what America has done for us. It has handicapped us today. And, you know, people misuse guns in every community. It's not just a black community.
Absolutely.
That they want to make us seem to think, but guns are misused all over the place. So I don't know if I answered your question, sister, but
You did a better job.
Because I'm going to tell you right now, I've been doing a lot of research on, you know, what's going on. And people, they're running out of ammo. They said gun sales has went up since
ammo.
It has went up.
Wow.
And the gun purchases has went up. And so, hey,
wow.
If they in line, we need to get in line. How about that?
Just recently,
I
watched a story out of Southern California where you had people lining up, and the one solace I could take about this, you had people lining up, black, white, pink, and purple. Now, usually, you know, you see a run on a gun store, you just see white America. Not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hispanics and blacks, and especially Asians right now, have come to realize we're being made the target.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody has always pumped their brains full of, they're your enemy. They're your enemy.
Right.
It's getting tight. and things are going to get to the point where he who is the mightiest and survive will survive. But the thing about it is there are places in Chicago where you have organizations that are teaching young black people about gun safety, about guns, and getting them to get their permits. And this is what we need to start doing. But this is what we need to start doing. All it needs to be is a couple of concerned folks get together and start getting it done. But we sit back and say, well, you know, just because they do that don't mean we have to do that. That's not the answer. But for somebody like me who grew up in East Oakland, I will tell you straight out, I'm sorry, it is the answer. Because I saw what was done. I saw brothers get shot down. I saw what was done. I seen Oakland PD kicking doors.
Thank you.
So I know what's going on out there.
Some of us have been in riots, and it ain't fun. It ain't fun, y'all, hiding under cars, dodging bullets.
I have been there, done that. Nah, I don't just talk about it. I've been there.
So what I like to do is encourage everybody to go to our Facebook and look at the information that we have posted today as well as yesterday, to look at the resources that are there in case you have a family member or a loved one that may need some resources going through this crisis right now. It's going to take all of us. It's all hands on deck now. This virus don't give a darn if you're a Democrat. This virus doesn't give a darn if you're a Republican. This virus doesn't give a darn if you're independent. And the virus don't give a darn if you have a political affiliation or not. What it is, it's a virus, and it's here to kill us until somebody try to figure out how to get, and I'm even scared about the vaccine piece because I'm not even sure what they put in the needles and them little bottles and things like that. So I you know, it's just, all of this is just really a lot, you know.
It's a lot to take in.
Of shooting
and
something
I don't...
in our bodies that well, they say, well, China, they're working around the clock to find a vaccine. I mean, well, I thought the problem came out of China.
Not only that, I watched
session now.
I watched Mark Zuckerberg. He sat down with Dr. Antonio Fauci today. And for all the talk that went on, I will say this about Dr. Fauci. The man is an alarmist. He sat there and talked for 40 minutes and didn't give up one piece of positive information. Everything he said was, we're not sure. We don't know. We assume. We speculate. There was never a positive answer for anything. Well, what if you get the virus and you get better and you start to get better? Well, it's a possibility you can get better, but then you can also catch it in the next 2 months again. There was never anything positive. So to be honest, no. These people have no clue what's going on. They have no idea what's going on, and they have no idea.
They don't want to take help from China, though. China has already got past their crisis
days
and are not, and the Americans are so arrogant. We don't want help from China. They have experts who have gotten past all this. They don't want them. They just want to let us.
They
suffer.
Do not. They do not want any damn help, and have said so. But yet,
Lord, have mercy.
You know, the other side of the coin is, 45 tried to pull that little slicky move. Hey, let me buy your – why don't you bring your company over here and let us do it like this?
Yeah.
Now, you're not going to tell me these people didn't know that this – you're not going to tell me these people didn't know this was coming. There's no way in the world you're going to convince me they had no idea what was going on.
So
they were going to play the role.
Yeah. I want to just, like, encourage everyone to – go buy some vegetables and, you know, plant it in your yard. Do what you need to
do. It's cornbread in the tube, top on the back.
Cornbread
on the right hand side.
Cornbread.
Yes, ma'am. But I want to kind of shift the conversation right now because we're heading towards the end of our show. I want to kind of shift the conversation to another topic right now. There's a press conference I'm going to play. I'm going to read a little bit of this, not all of this. But we have a the homeless people in Los Angeles that seized 12 vacant homes in L.A. These homes are owned by the state of California, Caltrain, and they bought them to, I guess, they're going to put a freeway or something through here. And as we know, Los Angeles has, I don't even know the number of homeless people in Los Angeles, but it is a big, big number. But these individuals, as we know that the women, three or four women in Oakland, occupied a house in Oakland because they were homeless. And they needed somewhere to stay, and they went in and took it over. And I think they bought the house or something. I was trying to get a hold of them and get them on our radio show. But the fact of the matter is we have another situation in L.A. where some people just decided to say, hey, this virus is here. The government don't have any housing for us. We're going to go and occupy this house or these 12 houses here in L.A. And it has brought a lot of controversy to this because some people say you're trespassing. You didn't buy that piece of property. Someone else owns it. So we have that conversation going on as well. So I'm going to go ahead and play the press conference here so that everybody can kind of hear and see, hear what I hear and see what I see. And then we're going to come back and we're going to discuss it in a few minutes here. Conference that was did this week in regards to the crisis of the housing right now. Do we think it's wrong for them to take over the housing? What do we do? I mean, we don't have any. The state doesn't have adequate housing for folk, and you know we have people living on the street. You know, and I'm gonna say this too. It's interesting that Governor Newsom. Yeah, it's interesting how now. Watch this now. He said, we're going to get trailers. He said, we're going to get hotels. He said, we're going to get all these resources to help the most vulnerable people in California get off the streets and to get them into somewhere safe. My question is now, how in the world all these resources, did these resources drop off the air, out the sky? I mean, were they there all the time? And we never pushed the button. We never pushed them to the extent. So what I'm seeing is it took the virus in another country called China to come into the United States to put pressure on the politicians now to do what they should have been doing years ago.
Years ago.
You know what? The thing about that is this here. You know, right now everybody want to make it about this virus. But being a native Californian and having relatives in the Los Angeles area over the years, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and now the interior, Modesto, Fresno, Manteca, Stockton, Sacramento, they are all starting to experience these homeless problems where the homeless population has grown out of control because everybody chose to ignore it instead of trying to do something about it. And in Los Angeles, 4 years ago when tent cities first start popping up, they should have started attacking them then instead of not doing anything, ignoring them, or just running them into jail instead of trying to find places to go. Just like here in Fresno, we got all these empty hotels sitting along the freeways. You mean to tell me that the Fresno City Council, the Board of Supervisors, y'all never thought about opening these places up and getting some of these people off the street?
A lot of it has to do with capitalism. If people are not making money off of it, they don't want to participate in it. And I say this, there are a lot of empty homes sitting in Southwest Fresno right now. These slumlords like JD Homes and a lot of the rest of them own these places. They don't want to let the homeless in there, but they should. They should be forced to. And not only that, I want to go a little bit further. If the homeless are allowed to occupy these homes, and I'm not talking about the ones where they're going to be demolished. I'm talking about the ones that are just sitting there with nobody in it. They should give them that property because that is the only way really to lift somebody out of poverty is to give them a stake. Real stake in something. You know, there are no bootstraps. There are no boots. You have got to own something and be able to acquire some equity on it. So this is an opportunity to me. If they really want to fundamentally change our society for the better and make it more equitable, to not just have people sitting in trailers in parking lots unless you go give them the damn trailer. Excuse my language.
Exactly. In other words, don't talk about it, be about it.
It's simple to us. I don't know why it's not simple to them. And all these so-called Christians, these evangelicals who want people to still tithe while they're dying, that's crazy too. All these people with all these mega churches, Osteen, Dollar, all these other ones, they should be writing a check to the homeless, every last one of them. Every last
Kenneth
one
Copeland
of them should be writing a check.
Kenneth Copeland said today that if someone was to lose their job, don't they dare stop tithing to the church. Don't you
That's
dare
right.
take the church's money away from them. Have you
That's
lost
right.
your rabbit mind? I'm trying to figure out how to put food on the table, and you want me to still line your pockets.
In his private jet. So, Rev, we can, the government and the rich can do better. None of us are going to be free till all of us are free. So,
you got that right.
What's interesting about this press conference is that we have a Reverend Walter Contreras. We have a reverend who has stepped outside the box to do the real work the kingdom builder,
mm-hmm.
not
mm-hmm.
someone who is more concerned about skidding and grinning with the mayor of L.A. or politicians.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He's out here with the people
mm-hmm.
who are suffering. He's out here with the people who are hurting. And he's risking his life. He's risking his time to help
mm-hmm.
those who are less fortunate.
Wow.
What has happened to our churches today? I mean, I thought this was the type of work Dr. King is doing here in America.
We've lost our way.
Where are the pastors right now when it comes to dealing with social issues in our community like this?
I saw on Facebook today that the People's Church were providing meals between 5 and 6:30. I think they were doing hot dogs and hamburgers in a drive-through fashion. But there are a lot of large black churches on the West Side too. West Side Church of God, St. Rest. You know, Second Baptist, these are big churches that could be doing this. And I'm only talking about the size of their congregation, not that it's all about numbers. But
right.
where is the moral will to do this? What I asked this on Facebook, and I haven't even looked at all the responses, but we've lost our way. We've lost our way as Christians and as community. I don't know what the answer is to that.
Unfortunately, one of the things have become that a lot of churches, and I'm not, pointing anybody out and nothing of that nature, but unfortunately in the black community, this is what I've been hearing for the last 4 or 5 years. Mega church, mega church, mega church. Everybody got this mega church mentality. Many have forgotten what a church actually came from and what the church actually did. And there are far too many who are standing up there preaching prosperity and trying to tell you how to get to heaven and how you going to live and how you going to have all these big riches instead of telling you what the church and what God really came about.
Well...
they have taken profit to a brand new level.
Well, see, that's the difference between old school church and newfangled church.
Exactly.
Newfangled church, they do, and this is not a judgment. They do praise dancing, which is wonderful. They've got, electric guitars, which is wonderful. The music is always going to be good in our churches. But something is missing. The ladies auxiliary that will go and check on somebody,
Exactly.
The hospital business, maybe they still do that. I don't know. But in the old days, whatever your need was, you went to your pastor, you went to your women's group, you went to the deacons, and you told them what you needed, and they would help you. So, I don't know. What is missing in our churches now? You have a better eye view. What do you think it is that we need that we don't have now?
Because it's
something's missing. Something's missing, Reverend Harris.
Was that question for me or Brother Tony?
Yes.
Sure.
No, it was for you. It was for you. What do you think is missing in the church?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
So, I think it depends what your belief system is. Your belief system is about social justice, then that means that you're going to speak truth to power. If your belief system is you're just going to go along and get along and you're more concerned about picture taking, eating chicken and watermelon with politicians, then you would be in good standings with politicians. So one of the things that why politicians don't like me is because I'm about my community business. And it really has nothing to do with liking me or not. What it has to do is a politician being accountable and doing what they was elected to do. So when you don't do what you're
right,
doing, then I'll start mobilizing the community to activate a recall on that politician. Because that's the power that we have as a community. And the community today hasn't been taught what is your power. Your vote is your power. Now, you may be one person, but that one vote can make a person win an election or make a person
lose
an election.
Right. That's right.
We have done a poor job not pointing any fingers out, but a lot of us have been doing the best we can. But let me not say poor. Let me just say that we're doing the best we can. But dealing with, so it's kind of like climbing a mountain right now. The mountain is very tall, very, very big, very wide. You don't know what you're going to come up against once you start climbing a mountain. But I think that just looking at Fresno right now, we have a lot of great preachers, a lot of great, you know, ministers and what have you, churches, facilities, buildings. But what we don't really have here, other than myself, you know, who's going to call a spade a spade? Everything that I go into across the country, I mean, I done ran with Al Sharpton. I done ran with Jesse Jackson. I done did it. Notice when we go into every city, they always want to rub elbows with the preacher so that it was the black church in the civil rights movement that was the catalyst for the civil rights movement, because that was a place where we would go organize. That was a place to get away from the enemy. The black church was so powerful during the civil rights movement and before the 1960s. They beat up little bitty girls in Alabama. To us that we know you're organizing, so this is what we're going to do for four little girls. So that was the church who goes into the North.
Okay.
And the entire church during Bible study. So the church is a powerful piece. It all has to do with what is your to step out and go up against power. What I teach people is when you attack power, power is going to attack you back. And when it attacks you,
right,
you better be born ready. Throw at you. Because if you don't, it'll sink you. So, you hear the Fresno minister in line back in, I think, the 70s. We have strong pastors here and strong deacons and, you know, Reverend Garrett and I just so many of them. I can't think of their names. Reverend
Daw.
Reverend Daw.
Reverend Riggins.
You know, people like pastors who really had their finger on the pulse of the community. And it's just unfortunate that today, you know, we just don't see our path where we were. You know, maybe they think they did a wonderful job. You know, black community here, we're in last place of this, last place of that. We have to have strong, bold, you know, home, backwoods, you know, type of preacher that's going to be when the politician starts throwing so much, you know. I mean, that's
right.
Not at all.
Right.
men try to, it's interesting dynamic dealing with black church. But anyway.
I see the complexity. Yes, yes. Thank you for your answer. I appreciate it.
At the end of our show, just thank you for tuning in. Google my name, Dr. Harris. I go to YouTube, my name in, see all the different things that we've worked on. Just ran for mayor. I mean, and one of on the campaign team who was mentoring me, to me on the campaign. Thank them as well. And so tomorrow is Friday, I believe, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, Friday. So we'll be back Monday night again, Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter show. Do some homework. I want you to research my name on YouTube. Research Allie Lee, West Fresno Democratic Club. Type this. He's going. Tony
Bullock.
Bullock. Tony Bullock. Go to Tony Bullock
Westside View.
And he has some podcasts. I think you'll really find it very interesting from his perspective. Pioneer from Edison High School, Edison Tiger as well, Allen and Reed. And so we're going to go ahead and sign off tonight. I just want to say thank you for the week. I'd like to give all these shows. Please share the show. We got to teach one another. We got to keep loving one another. Let's do that. Let's not forget that we are our brothers and sisters' keeper. And I'm going to give the last words. Brother Tony, thank you again, sir, for coming on to.
Hey, always. Always glad to step in.
Yes, sir. I want to give Sister Aline the last day of the show. She always
all right now. All right. I say, I'm going to say what I always say. Stay black till we get that.
All right.
Amen. All power to all people.
We're out.